Our scripture today comes from the book of Acts, the third chapter, verses 1 through 10. One day, Peter and John were going up to the temple at the hour of prayer at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And a man lame from birth was being carried in. People would lay him daily at the gate of the temple, called the Beautiful Gate, so that he could ask for alms from those who were passing by. Now, when he saw Peter and John about to go into the temple, he asked them for alms. And Peter looked intently at him, as did John, and said, "Look at us." And he fixed his attention upon them, expecting to receive something from them. But Peter said, "I have no silver or gold, but what I have I give you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, stand up and walk." And he took him by the right hand, and he raised him up, and immediately his feet and his ankles were made strong. And he jumped up, and he stood, he began to walk. He entered the temple with them, walking and leaping and praising God. And all the people saw him walking and praising God, and they recognized him as the one who used to sit and ask for alms at the Beautiful Gate of the temple. And they were filled with wonder and amazement at what happened to him. The Lord always blesses the reading of His holy word. We come today to the book that is known as the Acts of the Apostles. The protagonists of this book, it's 28 chapters long, and the two protagonists in it are Peter and Paul. It's a strange writing because you start out with Peter being the protagonist, and then about a third of the way through the book, Peter almost disappears, and Paul is the protagonist for the rest of that book. Now, we know, because of the introduction to the Acts of the Apostles, that it was written by the same person who wrote the Gospel of Luke. So it really kind of is a set. The Gospel of Luke from up until the resurrection of Jesus, and then the Acts of the Apostles showing what happens to people after the resurrection of Jesus and the early things that the early Christians did. But even though it's the same person who wrote both of these books, there's a profound difference between them, particularly in the role of the protagonist. In Luke, Jesus is the protagonist. And when we read the Gospel of Luke, we feel drawn to Jesus. We feel the compassion of Jesus all the way through the book of Luke. We get the sense that Jesus understands who we are. And he understands the struggles and the difficulties of us. When we read the Gospel of Luke, we experience the mercy of Jesus, and his gentleness comes through. In the Gospel of Luke, when we read about Jesus, we want to be like him. We like him. He's the kind of person we want to follow. We'd like to, as he goes from village to village, we feel drawn, as so many people did in the Gospel of Luke. We want to hang out with him. We love his stories and his sayings. They're very clear and they make sense to us and they seem relevant to our lives. And that's how Luke presents Jesus as a protagonist. But when we get to Peter and Paul, when he writes about them in the book of Acts, we don't so much feel drawn to them. For one thing, you don't want to travel with Paul. You might want to go with Jesus, but you don't want to travel with Paul. I mean, he ends up arguing with everybody everywhere he goes. He gets in fights. He gets thrown in jail. Sometimes you're going to get thrown in jail with him. He gets beaten up. And he doesn't have very good luck when he's traveling. He's involved, for instance, in a shipwreck. And so we read about Paul and we think, I think I'm just going to sit in my chair and read about him. I'm not sure I want to go with this guy. And he doesn't seem to have the gentleness and the mercy and the compassion. He's harsh. And Peter comes across with a certain sort of harshness. And Peter and Paul are condescending to people. And they're always getting in arguments with everybody. They get in arguments with each other, in fact, Peter and Paul do. And as we read through the book of Acts and we read about Peter and Paul, we think, I don't want to be like them. We maybe respect them, and the stories that we read about them are fascinating, but we don't have the same experience of them as we do with Jesus when we're reading in the Gospel of Luke. Now, another thing about the book of Acts, the full title in English, and it's not in the book itself necessarily, but the full title in English is the Acts of the Apostles. And that's a little bit misleading in terms of what is actually in that book, because the book of Acts of the Apostles is not so much about their actions as it is about their words and their speeches and their sermons and their explanations and their teachings and their arguments. A more accurate title would be The Words of the Apostles. As you're reading through that book, there will be long stretches where you're going to think, this just sounds like the guy I have to listen to on Sunday morning. Is this never going to end? It just goes on and on. And it's repetitive. You hear the story of Paul's conversion on the road to Damascus. You hear it three different times and in detail. To read this book is like listening to somebody who keeps repeating themselves and tells you the same story every time that you listen to them. And we get the whole story of the Old Testament in a sermon. We get the story of Jesus and his crucifixion and his resurrection. We hear that over and over. So this book, rather than the Acts of the Apostles, probably would be better named The Words of the Apostles, because it's mostly full of speeches. And what it does show us is how the words of the apostles cause things to change. And because of the things the apostles say, people's lives are changed. Sometimes people hear the words of the apostles and they decide they don't want anything to do with Jesus that they're talking about. Other times people hear the words of the apostles and their lives are changed for the better, and they feel drawn into this community of people who follow Jesus. So the words, they're not just words. They are words that change things. They change people's lives. And that's a key thing about the book of the Acts of the Apostles. Their words actually have an effect on the people around them and the world around them. Now, the book starts out just kind of a review of some of the incidents where these words are taking place. The book of Acts starts out with Jesus ascending into heaven. And so that means he's not going to be with people in the same way that he was in, say, Galilee and Jerusalem and in places where we read about him in the Gospels. He's going to be with people, but in a very different way. And so that's the first story that we get. The next story is the biggest story in the whole book, and that is the day of Pentecost, because the followers of Jesus, they're gathered together, they're afraid, and suddenly a noise and a spirit comes into the room where they're gathered, and the thing that happens is that they are all given words to say. That's the whole point of the day of Pentecost, is that everybody in the church is given something to say. And this will be the key thing in everything that's to follow in the book of Acts, is that everybody who's in the church is given words to say. And when we put all of us together, There's nobody in the world that can't hear what we have to say. There's somebody here who can speak to anybody. There's always somebody in the church who can get the word out and make a difference in somebody else's life. We see that as the early church is formed in the book of Acts, they have a very unique way of relating to each other. They eat meals together in each other's homes. They pray together constantly. They go to the temple and they worship God together. And if any of them has any need, they pool their possessions and their funds to see that everybody in the community is taken care of. And that's the characteristic of the early church. And we read about that in the book of Acts. There's a lot of jail time in the book of Acts. Peter and John get themselves arrested. Peter gets himself arrested a couple other times. And they are arrested because people don't like the effect their words are having on the population. The words that Peter and John and the other early disciples are saying are getting people stirred up. They're causing people to change. And they're causing people to look at the authorities they have, whether it's the religious authorities or the government authorities. People are thinking about the words of the apostles, and they're thinking, the way I need to live, I need to be listening to these words that are coming from the disciples of Jesus rather than shaping my life by these other religious authorities or these other authorities. And so people who have power are jealous of Peter and John, and they keep getting arrested. It's in the book of Acts that there is so much to do to care for people that the church begins to organize itself, and certain people are set aside. They're called deacons to help care for the widows who are impoverished and who need charitable help from the church. So the deacons are doing the charitable work, and meanwhile the apostles continue to be involved in coming up with the words that need to be spoken to everybody in order to make a difference in people's lives. It's in the book of Acts that we see the first person who is a follower of Jesus who is killed for holding on to the faith, and that person is Stephen. It's in the book of Acts that a fellow named Saul, who didn't like Christians and who really thought we needed to crack down on them, even if it meant killing them, a fellow by the name of Saul, he's on his way to Damascus to try to round up some of these Christians and bring them back to Jerusalem so they can be jailed and punished. It's on the way to Damascus that there's this blinding light, and Saul is suddenly stricken blind, and he becomes very weak, but he hears a voice, and he wants to know what's happening, and the voice says, "I'm Jesus, and I've got a new way of life. I have a new life to give you right now." And so Paul goes through this time of change. It takes years before Paul is going to be ready to go out and himself have the words that need to be said in order to change people's lives. But he starts, it's this dramatic event on the road to Damascus, and then there's this long process where Paul has to relearn everything. And he's so filled with the words that need to be said that he's going to make a difference. At the point of Paul's conversion, Peter begins to fade, and this is where Paul becomes the protagonist in the book of Acts. Paul sets out on some journeys. He makes some swings through some of the Mediterranean islands. He hits some of those places. He goes up into what we would know as modern-day Turkey today. He makes four different journeys. The first journey is with Barnabas, and then he and Barnabas have an argument, and they go their separate ways, and after that, Paul's traveling companion will be Silas, and a young man, Timothy, joins them. But in these journeys where Paul is going out and he's sharing the words with people, he goes to the Mediterranean islands, he goes to Turkey, he goes to Greece, and he goes in and out of Jerusalem several times. So he's very busy, in that Mediterranean basin. Eventually, by the end of the book of Acts, he ends up in Italy at Rome. That's the area where Paul works. Paul tends to go when he goes to a place because the Jewish people were scattered all through this part of the world. Whenever Paul would go someplace, he would, because he was a good Jew himself, he would go and find the Jewish community, and that's usually where he would stay, but it's where he also could start talking to people. And some of the people who heard him agreed with him and became Christian, and some of the people who heard him didn't agree with him and sometimes got violent with him. And so Paul is in and out of jail, and Paul is in and out of trouble with people as he shares his words in these various communities. Now, again, I want to go back to the words, because the words that Paul is using and the words earlier that Peter did, sometimes it's a story that they're sharing with somebody. Sometimes it's an explanation. Sometimes it's an argument. It could be anything that they're doing. Whatever they can share that will help bring about changes in people's lives. This is the essence of this particular book. Now, eventually, Paul is arrested in Jerusalem, and he's arrested because the hardline Jewish religious leaders, they don't like some of the changes that he's been making. And particularly, Paul has been inviting non-Jewish people into the church, and he's not requiring them to do all the things that you have to do to be a good Jewish person. So he's understanding Christianity as breaking away from some of the legalisms of some of the Jewish people that they had. So he's arrested by these hardliners. They're upset. They want him to be killed. The Roman governor won't do it. So they have plotted in the book of Acts to try and ambush him when he's being transferred from one cell to another. They're going to kill him. There are all these plots against Paul. And finally, he escapes Jerusalem because he's a Roman citizen and he has a right for the authorities in Rome to hear his case. And so that's how he manages to get out of Jerusalem and avoid being killed by the hardliners there. And the book of Acts ends with Paul in Rome awaiting his hearing with the Roman authorities. So we have bad news, we have good news in this particular book. The bad news, as we read through the book of Acts, is the bad news in Acts happens to be the Jews. And I need you to stick with me here. Don't check out, because you're going to get the whole wrong idea if you check out at this point. Over and over in the book of Acts, the Jews are depicted as the ones who are causing the problem. Now, it's unfortunate that the writer of Acts is not a little more specific, because Jesus was a Jew. And Jesus was fine. Paul was a Jew. Paul was fine. Barnabas and Silas were Jews. Timothy was a Jew. Peter was a Jew. All the disciples were Jewish people. And so we have to be careful. There's a little bit of sloppy writing here. We have to be careful when we read this that we don't come away and say it's the Christians against the Jews, because it's not that at all. You would think that if you don't read this carefully. The problem is the conservative hardline Jews. That's the problem. And now, today, we say, well, what does that look like today? And today, what it looks like, because most of us have not had any difficulties with conservative hardline Jews. There are no conservative hardline Jews in Mattoon that are trying to shut us down or throw us in prison or argue with us or try to undercut what we're doing. Honest, we have no trouble with hardline conservative Jews. But if we say, well, who are those people who are doing those things today? Then we have to, unfortunately, come up with the understanding that it's probably the hardline conservative Christians who've taken over doing those same things. So I want to say something about conservative, because I'm not talking about politically conservative. I'm talking about what it means to be conservative in our faith. Politically conservative, I'm about 75% politically conservative. And what that means is that you want to be careful when you approach problems. You want to be thoughtful. You want to think through things before you take your actions. You want to appreciate the complexity of an issue and not just rush headlong into some sort of social engineering to make changes. And politically, I'm conservative for the most part. Now, it doesn't mean I'm not partisan. It has nothing to do with one party or another. It has nothing to do with idolizing some political figure. It's just my understanding of how, as a nation, as a community, we need to deal with problems. So I'm not talking about conservatism in a political or philosophical sense of the word. I'm talking about it when it comes to faith. And the fact is, conservative, the word conservative and the word faith are opposite of each other. You cannot be a conservative Christian, because faith has to do with being bold. And faith has to do with taking risks. And faith has to do with being able to step out beyond the confines of our rational thinking and realize that truth is much more than what we can come up with rationally. And so to live by faith is to live with a boldness that we could not tolerate in our political conservatism. To live by faith is to love somebody even though every thoughtful reason is there to not love that person. To live by faith is to forgive somebody, even though every rational thought in our mind tells us to not forgive that person. To live by faith is to be loyal to people in the community of faith, even though we can come up with 100 reasons why we don't want that person to be a part of our community, or why we should not go along with that person. You cannot be a conservative Christian. You can be conservative politically and a Christian, and for some reason, paradoxically, that goes together. But we cannot be the kind of people as these hardline conservative Jews were in the book of Acts, who only wanted to judge people. They only wanted to condemn people. They only wanted to point out the people and say, I'm better than them. They only wanted to exclude people from the community. They only wanted to find reasons why something was wrong with somebody. When you talked to these people, all they could talk about were words that were negative about somebody. All you ever heard from them was what they didn't like. And this is the bad news of the book of Acts, is that these people are constantly eroding the work of the love of Christ and the way the Spirit of Christ wants to form us together in community, even if we may be uncomfortable with each other. The bad news of the book of Acts. The good news of the book of Acts is that we see in the book of Acts a community that is gathering that is relevant to its members and relevant to the world around them. I think one of the problems the modern church has is that we have a crisis of relevance sometimes. This has been identified 20 years ago by people who did massive studies of the United Methodist Church. And not just the United Methodist Church, but 20 years ago, there was a massive study and says the United Methodist Church has two problems. One is it's going down; it's going to fall apart financially because it's not built on good, sound financial income and outgo. And secondly, it has a crisis of relevance. People are leaving the church because the church isn't relevant to their lives. And people are not coming into the church because it's not relevant. They can't see as how the church is relevant to what's going on in the world. But the good news in the book of Acts is this is a church that's relevant to people's lives who are in it, and it's relevant to the people who are outside of it. It's relevant to the people who are inside of it because the church is where people accept one another. The church is where people forgive one another. The church is where people share their meals together. The church is where people pray together. The church is where people worship God together. The church is where if anybody has a need, people share with each other. The church is incredibly relevant to its members in the book of Acts. The church is also relevant to the community around it. And that's where the words and the messages come in, because as Peter or Paul or whoever it is, Stephen or Philip or any of the people who are filled with these words, as they say the words that they have to say, people listen to those words, they listen to the stories, they listen to the arguments, they listen to the explanations, and they can see that their lives will be changed if they will take those words to heart. And people want change in their lives in certain areas, particularly people who are struggling and suffering and who've hit a wall in their lives. People want something to change, and they are eager to hear words that can bring about those changes. And so the church was relevant because it had the stories and the arguments and the explanations that opened the door for people's lives to be transformed. The church didn't give word, they weren't publicity words, they weren't words of advertisement, they weren't words of marketing trying to get people into the church. They were words that touched people's lives where they were. And that's the good news of the book of Acts, is that we have this community that is so relevant to its members and to the world around it. Final thing, I want to say one practical thing that we can gain from the book of Acts, although there's so many things that I could share, but I want to go back to the scripture that I read. Peter and John were going into the temple area, and there was somebody begging them for alms. It was a man who was lame. They say, "We have no money to give you." What they gave him instead, it wasn't money that they gave him. It wasn't something material that they gave him. What they gave him were their words. In this case, word of command. Stand up. Along with the words, they gave him a hand. They gave him a hand up. But there's a difference between a community that specializes in material charity and a community that specializes in the message. It's very easy for institutional churches to specialize in material charity. It makes us feel good when we can give stuff to people. When we can give somebody some food, it makes us feel good. Material charity. It makes us feel good when we can build a school or build a hospital. Material charity for people. It makes us feel good when we can send emergency aid to a place that's been hit by some natural disaster. And these are good things. And these are things that have to be done in our world. People need material aid. If we read the book of James, it's not enough to just say, "Oh, I'm praying for you," and then do nothing. So material aid is critically important. But the essence of the church in the book of Acts is not the material aid that people give. The essence of the church there is the message that people have to give. And the message means that everybody in the church has some story to tell, has some explanation to give, has some argument to make. So that the people who are outside the church are given an invitation by our stories, by our arguments, by our explanations. They're given an opening for their lives to change. In the process of giving out material charity, a person's life may or may not get better. When we give someone material charity, we may just as readily be creating an attitude of entitlement, or an attitude, or we may be enabling somebody. So material charity in fact seldom changes people's lives. It helps somebody through the moment. We give someone a fish for the day. And our material charity only is as good as until the money runs out, or until the food in that basket is gone, or until the next thing we fixed up in their home breaks. It's only good for such a short period of time. And people's lives are seldom changed by it. But the words that the church has to offer people do change people's lives. Some people hear our words and decide they don't want anything to do with Christ because they're addicted to another power or another idol in this life. But many people, when they hear the words, when they hear the stories, the explanations, the arguments, so many people are touched by the words that we have to say. And one of the things that I think is ahead for churches in the next decade or two, particularly institutional churches with big buildings who have specialized in material charity, I think one of the biggest challenges ahead is to be able to get outside of that way of thinking and into the book of Acts and see how much the world needs our message. It's not that we don't continue as loving, compassionate human beings to share with people who have need, whatever the need of the day is. But the most important thing of the church, and we see this when the church had to decide to set aside some deacons to do the material aid so that the apostles could continue to focus on the message. And there were twice as many apostles as there were deacons. That's important for us to remember. The essence of the church is our message. And how we figure that out practically, that's a wonderful challenge for us.